You're listening to Jimmy Disu.
Jimmy Disu.
Right here on 99.3 Nigeria Info.
Nigeria Info.
Morning, everybody. Welcome to the Daily Digest with Jimmy Disu, the first in the year. Happy New Year. Okay, so what have I done? I've lined up a series of stories for us for the year. Tomorrow we have Diabumi as usual. On Thursday, we have Segun Agbede, who's going to talk about 2024 with a bit of leaning on sports. Okay, and then I think, I can't remember who it is on Friday, but on Saturday, we're going to have Funke Kuyoro, Mrs. Funke Kuyoro, who will talk. She's into party planning and so on and so forth. So she'll be looking at the social aspects of what we should expect in 2024. Kwame Adeniyi is already on the line. Good morning, Kwame.
Good morning, Jimmy. How are you? Happy New Year.
Fine. I don't know how the technicians will bring down that there's an echo. If the engineers can do it, I don't know what they would do. Either should it be to put his microphone, speak more to the mic?
Maybe if he gets close to the mic.
Get close to the mic.
Oh, I'm trying to get as close as I can without any.
You have it. Just don't move. Don't breathe. Don't bring a cigarette out of your pocket.
No, I don't.
Okay, Kwame Adeniyi comes with a lot of experience, and he was my editor in 1981, Financial Punch, and since then he's been editor of the Democrat, and he had a stint with FCMB. By the way, I was with Adetayo on Saturday, Kwame, the same Adetayo of FCMB.
Okay.
Do you remember him? Yes,
I remember him.
Yes, he's been consulting here and there, and I want us to both look at the year 2024 and what you think our people should expect. Let's start, for example, Kwame, with on the political front. What do you think is likely to happen this year?
Well, on the political front, actually, I'm not expecting much to happen except the disturbing, an acceleration of the disturbing trend towards what is looking like a one-party state. Because if you look at the trend now,
Oh, God, they're frozen. Yes, he most likely
will be affected. Which Peter Obi as a person, as a persona, and the obedient. So maybe what you have is might be a coalition of a new formation, grouping together the obedience and other dissident and disaffected forces. Mm-hmm. But because right, if you look at the charade going on in River State, for example, one person's to control both the APC and the PDP. This is very unusual. I'm not sure if there's any precedent from it since even 1979. And then the most disturbing thing for me actually is that whichever side of the divide you are on, the country actually needs an active perspective to whatever is going on, because right now, you know, there are a lot of debatable things that have been going on, not just from the change of government last year, but preceding it in the last 10 years. You have to look at the direction this country is going in, whether the country is not just uncompetitive, but whether the country is actually sliding into irrelevance, which is frightening. I mean, some join the BRICS nations today, Saudi Arabia and stuff. And the fact that, you don't have to join anything. I mean, I'm all for pulling out of OPEC for a start. But the fact that you weren't invited to the party, I think you ought to ask yourself about your continuing relevance. The key thing about this political framework next year is that by the time the court cases are decided, would you really have a plural society? Would this country be a plural society with a government in place and a government, in an alternative government in waiting? This is the kind of thing that should disturb anybody who believes in a democracy.
Mm. Do you think that President Tinubu has settled down to the job and therefore you can make some a prediction as to where he'll be headed this year? And I want to... At the back of that, I want you to look at the so-called proclamation he made on the rivers issue. But now that all his own cases have been sorted, from the proclamation, I want you to look and predict what do you think might be his strategy in the new year.
Well, I mean, I don't know what you mean about settling down. I mean, you're elected into office from the day you get the certificate of return. You're supposed to be...
He did not run it.
The president is a very astute, very established politician. Mm. And that's a double-edged sword. You know, he's very astute, he's very experienced. He's savvy. Yeah. I mean, I expected him to win the election with maybe 34, 35% of the vote. He did better. It's a first-past the post. But the basic thing, actually, since there's no time, you see, there's a difference that I started noticing almost from day one.
Mm.
That, they, you know, if you read the manifesto of the All Progressive Congress, I did, out of interest, they were committed, admirably, in my opinion, to creating a social market economy, which you associate with post-war Germany and with the Scandinavian countries. And so I was enthusiastic about that, actually, never mind who the candidate was. But from what we've seen from the inauguration day speech, correctly cancelling subsidy to the budget and stuff, it looks as if the manifesto position on a social market economy and on so many other things has been jettisoned. We're really back to the days of the, this is to me like Bretton Woods light or structural adjustment program part two. I don't see any departure from that trend. Obviously, you have jettisoned the main thrust that I found attractive as an individual in the manifesto. This year is going to be, I think it's going to be quite turbulent because whether you're going to be able to meet the OPEC quota, whether you're, I mean, there's a school of thought, which I think is delusional, which is arguing that to tame inflation, you have to increase interest rates. I find that really absurd because Nigeria's inflation is cost push. I mean, we live here in Oshogo, and we know that if you see a 50 naira onion in Oshogo, you probably fall apart. I think our inflation is cost push. It's not demand driven, and I thought a lot more should have been done for this year in terms of there should have been massive budget allocations to things like rural roads, because the problem is just getting stuff from the producer who has no storage space to the markets is a key battleground, and increasing interest rate is not going to solve that. It's just going to make it worse. I don't expect anything different. They've decided on a course, and I can't see anything being different. We just hope that things will get better. But getting better depends on your definition of what is better. And right now, you have to increase purchasing power. I mean, in this, our own state, you have to increase, because I mean, if you don't increase, a lot of places are going to close down, not just whatever is left of manufacturing, but even retail services and stuff. Because, I mean, in this state, for example, whatever cynicism you might have about the odious word polity, by giving a cost.
Good.
It's a disgusting word. It's actually that polity thing is insulting. And I think they should drop it from the lexic. The thing is insulting. I mean, it's like. It's like I'm coming to your house to beg, you know, Bros Jim, make my fine 2,000 now. You get what I mean? Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I don't know where this, I see the use of that word itself shows you how we have lost track.
Okay, very quickly, yeah. Because I know Kwame, you can talk till 11, 12. For example, talking about the palliatives, we were told just this morning that only 163,000 people benefited from the so-called transport subsidy. And secondly, our friend Dele Alake is Minister for Minerals. Why is he the one coordinating? There's a Minister for Transport. Why is he the one coordinating the palliatives for transportation? What's going on?
You see, the whole thing is absurd. I mean, it just shows a dysfunction. What's the, I mean, so much is riding on ministries like solid minerals, blue economy. Does the Minister of Solid Minerals, does he actually have 1 hour in the day to do anything else other than increasing revenues from solid minerals, other than the environmental disaster? If you look at Oshun River, it's gold color. It's an environmental disaster. Anybody falls into that Oshun River is dead. You have a Minister of Transport, you have a Minister of Humanitarian, whatever. Why don't they condone these things? And then secondly, that 163,000, actually one station say 166,000. What is the statistics the 166,000 is based on? What is the segmentation? Look, I'm a frequent rail traveler like you and Inka, my sister, know. The fact is that anybody who's gone on the
rail... Why did you have to say me and your sister? I don't like...
the whole thing on the rails has become a racket. The so-called mobile app and booking online has failed.
Oh, really?
Predictably, it's failed now. Okay, I'm surprised because what an outstanding place like yours should have done... should have been able to send people there to go on the trail since they started the so-called freebie. This thing has collapsed. I mean, the thing is that, first of all, railways were saying to frequent users like myself that you can't do anything online. Then all of a sudden, we had a freebie.
You could
do it. The fact is, it doesn't tell us. But even the two stations said it this morning. I'm not going to mention your competitors, but two television stations said it this morning. And the whole thing has descended into racketeering, that the staff of Nigerian Railways are now getting backhanders for people to get into the trains. But this is predictable because the rails, after borrowing billions of dollars or whatever it did, they should have been concessioned straight away.
Before we get trapped into that, I'd asked, going forward for the president, but there was something that happened over the weekend, and I think I sent you the video, where he came to Lagos Island, and rather than hail, the shouts were that we are hungry, we are hungry, we are hungry. What does that indicate to you? Specifically, they said
Actually, it indicates what you already know. There's mass disaffection. You know, the thing is, I actually believe that a lot of the decisions they were taking had to be, you couldn't continue to postpone. But what was the response? Look, let me give you an example that, I'm sorry, I sound like an old man, but an example that resonates with people of your age and mine. When the same kind of thing happened in 1962, and the government had to do the austerity measures. You know, there was one Chicago song of austerity measures.
Lode.
But if you look at the austerity measures, it was moved by Prime Minister Tafa Balewa, and the leader of the opposition, Chief Obafemi Awolowo, seconded the motion. He didn't support it. He seconded, which is the highest point, the best point of the Nigerian political establishment since independence. That was not the point, Jimmy. The entire political establishment agreed on a 10% wage cut from the president to local government councillors. If you remember, Jimmy, a new culture emerged out of the austerity measures, repairs. People were no longer, ministers, everybody was, they were no longer changing furniture or changing cars, no more foreign travels. You now had people A repair culture came on, people repairing red diffusion, air conditioning, fans, furniture that would have been thrown out. Actually, the austerity measures ended up as a stimulus because of the repair culture. You remember what I'm talking about? You are a bourgeoisie, you were a colonel there, you know, this kind of way. That is with your friend's best friend. So when you now look at it, the austerity measures produced an economy. It was a stimulus. All those people were now repairing things, graduates of the Yaba Trade Center. There was a repair culture echo. Now, the question you ask yourself is, what has actually come out of this hardship? It has not been turned into the advantage that it should have been turned into, like the austerity measures were. And you know, if people were shouting Ebim Power, it's not the president, from the little I know about it, is not a narcissist. He's not happy about people suffering. But the way the political establishment have gallivanted is different from 1962. There's been no this thing that you are ready to make sacrifices. You cannot ask people. Look, the sacrifices are enormous, whether people are spinning some yarn or not. Like I said, my own little crackpot about a 50 naira onion, you know, shows a lot. The fact is that the devaluation of the naira in the attempt to merge the rates, which hasn't still been done, was 42%. 42% devaluation, even in the United States of America, which has social safety nets, but it's vicious. So if those people were shouting Ebim Power, I think it was sending a message to the political establishment rather than seeing the president himself as a narcissist, you know, that kind of thing. But it is obvious from the way that they are carrying on, specifically the way that the National Assembly itself is carrying on, that there's no intention to depart from this disgraceful route where you ask people to make sacrifices that you are obviously not even contemplating or will contemplate. You feel it beneath you to make sacrifices. So this battle cry of Ebim Power is going to continue because no miracle is going to put increased purchasing power.
Let me tell you, one of our leading pastors, you know, I took him on this morning, and he was saying something to the effect that before it can get better, it is going to get worse.
Even a toddler can tell you.
I know, but I wasn't too happy because I think that the people who are privileged at this point must be telling the government the truth. Indeed, the president himself has to be told the truth.
You can't do that. You can't do that. This is state capture. The Nigerian state is in a subordinate relation to powerful vested interest groups and individuals. Wow. You see, you're talking about democracy. This is not a semi. And when the economist said about 25 years ago, this is semi-democracy, everybody was angry, including Obasanjo. But this is semi-democracy. You have to be very careful. Most of what you call an elite are really creations, and they live on state-funded privileges. Like that, you know, it was actually Tunde Obadino who said that. You remember Tunde?
Of course, I remember Tunde Obadino, yes.
He was saying, I love this phrase, you know,
state funded privileges.
So, okay, what else is state funded privileges rather than giving yourself a 150 million naira SUV? Does anybody give himself that in London, in the Netherlands, in Sweden? In South Africa?
In America.
So you cannot... it is very, very dicey to speak truth to power because it's a dangerous thing. If you're not talking about a country where you have a rule of law, a functioning judiciary, where you can be anything, do anything you want to do without knowing anybody. Most of these things are based on access. You have to have access. And you go about prating and talking all kind of crap, you know. These people are not going to give you access. If you don't get access, how do you get your licenses? How do you get, it's all a paddy-paddy arrangement as the outstanding analyst we've ever produced, Fela Kuti, would have said, you know. So people talking truth to power is a very dicey proposition. Yeah, because I mean, most of what you have.
But where does that leave? Where does that leave the common man? Have we bound them to the Philistines? They don't exist.
Well, I think with all due respect, Jimmy, you're getting a bit muddled up. You don't usually do. What you call the common man?
Yes,
is an extra in somebody else's movie.
An extra.
It's an extra. Hey, what you are describing?
You're very wicked with words.
Sorry about that,
Sheriff.
Somebody is a common man. The man, the people you are referring, they are extras in a movie. They have their moments of. They are 15 minutes in the sun, usually during the election period, get the book. They have no citizenship rights. They are not citizens of a country. I mean, one of the things I found admirable from going to secondary school, you know, about the United Kingdom, is that it's actually a democracy. You know, you look at things like the courts and parliament, free and fair election, you know, that kind of thing, you know. And you say this is what British democracy is about. Actually, what I actually found admirable about British democracy from about the age of 15, something like that, is that it's based on home ownership.
Okay, can you just hold it there so that I can take a short break?
Can I take a coffee?
Yeah, you can take a coffee, but don't smoke a cigarette in public.
If you have sent stuff from that place next door, now croissant and stuff.
Okay, I'm having a discussion with Kwame Ademilu. Kwame Ademilu has almost close to about 50 years media experience. Actually, he was my boss. I got to meet him as my boss in 1981. Yeah, it was 1981. I met him as my boss and the later Victor Gundipe. All of us young cats then, Pat Tommy, Atedo Peter said, all of us young, Atedo I think was a new breed, Pat was also a new breed, well, and then we moved to the corporate sector. Well, don't let me go down memory lane too much, or else I'll be here till about 11. Mm-hmm. We're going to take a short break now. When we come back, we'll take some of your calls, and then we'll just move on with our discussion. 0700-993-993-993 and the female line 01465-7190. Come here, hold on. Don't strike a match yet. Take a short break. I will be right back.
You're listening to Jimmy Dis right here on 99.3 Nigeria Info.
Welcome back to the Daily Digest with Jimmy Disu. And I have with me Mr. Kwame Ademilu, world first class brain in journalism. I'm sure you miss those days we had at the Financial Punch when you were my editor and I was your deputy.
Well, forget about that. You know, the thing, it also showed a lot of how the country went in a negative direction, because I mean, people were more intellectually innovated. They were interested in the cause and effects of things, and it was a good time to be alive because people were thinking. People put premium on cricket. Nobody puts premium on cricket thinking now. That's why you have thought out policies. That's why, I mean, how can you say, for example, that 163,000 people use the food? I mean, what kind of data? No, I mean, first of all, if 163,000, which is admirable, used it, where's the data? What's the market segmentation?
I'm even saying if you had the national subsidy arrangement for 200 million people and only 163,000 people benefited, surely you'd be joking if you were clapping for yourself.
Yeah, because, I mean, the thing is... the other thing doesn't add up, because those routes, they were not universal. They were not across the country. I mean, there's a place
May I seek your indulgence that we just let's just forget about it's infantile if you ask me. I've got so irritated. I was so irritated that this morning the sheriff almost went under the table. I was laughing and puffing.
I understand.
But that goes, because at that time you were talking about both of us were under 30.
Very much under 30. Yeah.
Very much under 30.
There was a reason to be alive then.
Yes. You know, intellectually.
I mean, intellectually, even socially, there was a reason to be alive. It was a
relatively. I mean, you remember that time, as young as we were, We spend Sundays going to Ikoyi Hotel to go and read the foreign papers, have a coffee and stuff like that. Okay, now, don't let's get this current generation, let's get them fired up. The incident that is happening in Rivers, does it indicate anything towards what you might find going on in the future? But maybe a bit of Ondo too, but principally in Rivers State.
Well, what is happening in Rivers is a tragic comic diversion, but it's also an indication of where we are. The country doesn't have political parties in the way that you describe a political party as they have evolved over the last 250, 300 years.
Mm.
One man is of two political parties at the same time. He dictates the territory of the state. The thing is, the thing is laughable, but it's a pointer to the future because obviously, I was listening yesterday to the governorship candidate of the SDP, Magnus Abe, and he said, the presenter actually said he was breaking news that he was on his way back to APC. What is happening there?
Wow, Magnus Abe.
You know, Jimmy, a long time ago, you know why this thing is so predictable and why the next episode, if you like going to cinemas, is going to happen in Kogi State. Try and remember Chapter 7 of Machiavelli's Discourses, the law of constant reminders.
Reminders, you always stress us.
You know when this thing broke out? You know, all my stuff is in Lagos. I wanted to go back and read the law of constant reminders. Because the thing is predictable. You put somebody in a position, once you start reminding him every other hour that when I put you there, the guy's human instinct and those of the people around him, they're going to start getting rattled. When people get rattled, they start getting very, very uptight, and then they start fighting back. They are human beings now. They're not domesticated Pavlovian dogs who know that everything you say. You get what I mean?
Yeah.
This thing was predictable. It tells you a lot about that. First of all, there are no political parties. Because you have all the levers of power, the budget and everything, you put somebody there and say he's a candidate of the party. The party wins the elections predictably through means known and unknown. And then that's what was happening with when we were in Punch. You now say that the so-called governor should meet you at the airport, receive you at the airport, and that kind of thing. And you dictate the commissioners, you dictate it's predictable that the guy is going to fight back. But it's also a very sad commentary that these are not political parties. They are special purpose vehicles. They are used to win elections, and then they are used to sort out the resources, not for the benefit of Jimmy's mythical common man who's just an extra in a movie, but to reinforce a political establishment and keep their positions. That's why the Wiki says he's not going to give up his structures, as if it's his personal structure. Have you had Bill Clinton or anybody say that? I'm not giving up my structure. The man has finished. Going forward, one of the problems you have when you said that somebody settled down is that it's a contradiction on terms. It's a contradiction in terms in a democracy. Somebody settling down. You have a political party. The party prepares for office. If you remember at that time in when Blair came into office, they had been out of office for 18 years. But they came on the Friday morning after he had been sworn in, kissed hands with the Queen. They had three budgets, not one, but three budgets prepared. So what is this settling down? All they had to do over the weekend was to harmonize, upgrade, whatever, because they had to present the financial statement to the House of Commons on Monday. So, you must have political parties. You know, you must have political parties that prepares for office, that does the heavy lifting, the nuts and bolts. Rivers shows that there are no political parties. What are these people fighting over? Are they fighting over the amount of housing that they're going to give to people on a monthly rent to buy bases like the LEDB did in Lagos? Are they fighting over disputes over the kind of public transportation they should have in Rivers State? Are they fighting over the curricula in the schools? How modern is the curricula? How much does it prepare the pupils to get a job in life, starting from having coding from the age of four? You get what I mean? Mm. All these things are not anything, but it just shows. And you see, if you don't have proper political parties, you're not going to have sensible governance. You get what I mean? Because what you have now is politics. In parentheses, you get what I mean? But you're not going to have governance, because governance starts about 4 or 5 years ago, before you came into office. You know, very quickly, Jimmy, there's no time. One of the things I always remember, you know, there was a guy who was 2 years ahead of me at university. So he got this, I think you used to call it VAC jobs in those days.
Yes, VAC jobs, yes.
He got this VAC job at the Labour Party's research department in Transport House. So I went to visit him. I didn't have a VAC job. I was loafing around. So I went to visit him during the holidays. You know, I entered that place, the research department of the Labour Party. The place was like a research institute. It was like entering the NIA or NISA. You know what I mean?
Yeah, NISA, yeah.
It's like department in UNILAC. So it was the party's research department. These guys had working groups, working on transport, housing, this one, that one, budget. Is that what they're doing in Rivers? So the guy came into office. He wasn't prepared for office. Somebody put him there as a satrap. And the rest is predictable. It's going to happen in Kogi within the next 4 or 5 months. Because it's programmed to happen now. I mean, it's a lot of constant reminders. You are constantly reminding the guy that you put in there. The guy is a human being. He has a spouse. He has his own retinue. He developed his own retinue.
Sorry to cut you there, because time is on very fast track. There are one or two people I'd like to call.
You
said what?
Where's the cruiser?
I'm a agent. I go shopping for you. No worry. I go shopping for you. I go put up on my belly. I'll post it to you. No trouble.
I play with you. DHL is working today.
Okay, our lines are open now. 0700-993-993 and 01465-7190, which is the female line. Let me quickly alert you that in the seat next to mine is Sheriff. So he put down the rules that we follow here. So no tricks to be played. No matter how sonorous your voice is, it shall be detected. Okay, our lines are open. Whilst coming and I continue? I think we have a caller there. We have a caller coming. 1 second. Hello, morning.
Good morning, Uncle Jimmy.
Yes.
Good morning to your guests and everybody. Happy New Year.
Yes.
Uncle Jimmy, I have learned a new thing today from this, your guest. He said there are no political parties. They are vehicles. Ha! This man just hit it. That is just the reality. God bless him. Thank you. That is all I have to say. Uncle Jimmy, do you imagine for him?
Also remember that he said that like the masses are like spears in a movie. If you don't catch the joke there, what the implication of what he's saying is that the masses don't matter, apart from using them during election to gain access to power. And recent developments have shown this. The stories making the rounds that we hear from the back end, they're very, very disturbing. You can now, some of them would now say, show you or confirm to you why A is doing whatever it is and B is not, and why C is doing whatever it is. That's the best way I can put it without hitting the nail actually on the head, because like Kami said, you got to do some critical thinking before you actually do say things. But it's sad. Do we have another caller there? Sorry? No, not yet. Putting that aside, what is our current state in the Committee of Nations? Where does Nigeria stand? You will remember that the president predicated even the success of his economy on FDIs. I don't know how much we'll say we have seen of FDIs as we speak, but also with the exit of some multinational, where is Nigeria standing now on the international front?
Well, I mean, the president's doing his best, as he's interpreted in the conventional sense. And but my own is that the country, it's painful to say this, so I hope they don't ban me from coming on your station again. But Nigeria is sliding into irrelevance.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, Nigeria is painful. It's not a nice thing to say. The country is sliding into irrelevance. And I've always had, for a long time, over 40 years, you know, I have my reservations about this FDI business. You know, if you remember, Jimmy, when, you know, I was just coming out of National Youth Service. I went to listen, myself and a late friend, Chike, fantastic guy, sad to say, gone, you know. So we went to listen to Awolo. And, you know, when he made that speech at Race Course, we were there. He was carrying the papers, you know, during when he, one of the first flag offs of his campaign, that if he became president, he wouldn't go out of the country and he wouldn't accept visitors for the first 2 years.
Yeah.
It's a different time, obviously. But you know, I've talked about this. If you look, for example, at a country like, let me give you two examples very quickly. Look at Brazil and look at Vietnam. How often do you see a Brazilian president going up and down looking for foreign direct investment? Brazil built up BNDES, the Brazilian Bank for Sustainable Development, over, it's 69 years old now. But with the kind of capital base that BNDES has, you don't need to build, go back. BNDES, as the Financial Times of London once said about 2 years ago, they can lend you money of up to 50 years tenure. Can JP Morgan lend you up to 50 years tenure? It's a powerful organization. But what they've done is that from 1954, they've set aside about 1% of the country's entire foreign exchange earnings into capitalizing BNDES every day, every year. Look at Vietnam. Vietnam invested so much in electricity, over-invested actually, borrowed a lot of money that could have bankrupted them. But where is Vietnam today, Jimmy? Vietnam today has the lowest electricity unit cost in the world. It's unhinging China, it's unhinging India, it's unhinging the United States. Samsung established their biggest manufacturing plant in Vietnam. You know what they do there?
Yeah.
They are exporting $65 billion worth of manufactured goods from Vietnam every year. When you and I were kids, we were taking part in anti-war match and watching Woodstock. I'll watch Woodstock next time I come.
I still have it.
But how much looking for whatever you call FDI does the president of Vietnam have to do? Vietnam has the lowest unit cost of electricity in the world. I'm talking about the world.
Yes.
Now, that is, I mean, the China and India actually are taking it as unfair advantage, but they're not subsidizing the.
Oh, God, we got to freeze. Come here on freeze. I don't know whether the fault is from. That's the problem when you don't have them in the studio. Yes. Okay. Can you hear us, Kwame?
I can hear you.
Okay, now.
No, you can't hear.
No, we can hear you now.
With the lowest unit cost of electricity in the world, you have to go about going anywhere looking for investment. It's investment that is chasing you, because like Samsung, it's not only Samsung, like dozens of companies have shown, locate your plant in Vietnam. There's a fantastic skilled workforce. You have the lowest cost of, nobody can beat your cost of electricity, which is a major cost. So why are you going up and down looking for FDI? The same with Brazil, right? They didn't have to do any indigenization decree or anything like that. The strength of the Bank for Sustainable Development. Building the indigenous capital, building indigenous development finance institutions, building your own infrastructure. But these things need deferment of gratification.
Okay, what is happening is that we are talking to Kwame through Zoom. I wish we had sent a chopper to go bring him down. Yeah, we tried the telephones the other time. I didn't succeed that much. but we're talking. We had to go through Zoom, and it's part of what we were talking about. You bring somebody from your FDI, whatever, bringing him to come and do business in Nigeria. He can't even do a meeting through Zoom with his partners on several other things. I think we might as well just kill it, Kwame.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, Kwame, in case you're listening, we thank you very much for your contribution. Next time, I will drag him in here on a Saturday. I'll go take a train to go bring him in. We still have time. We have about 5 more minutes, and so we can use that opportunity to take some of your reactions to some of the things he has said. So 0700-993-993-993-01465-7190. Any interesting reaction there?
Good morning, sir.
Morning.
Happy New Year, Uncle Jimmy. This is Malik speaking.
Morning, Malik. How are you?
Uncle Jimmy, you see, all people say there is always the truth. But the problem is that when the citizens are docile, the government will never work. Thank you.
All right, you heard that from Malik. you can interpret it which way you like. But I think it's something that's making me think. Hello, good morning. We lost that one again. Yes, you can read that. Yes.
All right. Okay. I think there's a call here.
A call. Oh, I thought it was a message.
Hello. Actually. Good morning.
Morning.
Jimmy.
Yes.
Okay, Sheriff, I agree to you.
Yes.
I salute you.
Anyway, I just want to say in the president's speech, he said he has taken a good decision by removing subsidy. And I want to thank him that the farm buying 4,500 naira for 25 liters. I'm buying it 19,000 now. Mr. President, thank you for removing the soil subsidy. Thank you.
Do you think that guy was sarcastic, Sheriff?
Oh yes. He was sarcastic. It was
I thought he was happy that he had so much money, he didn't know how to spend it. So.
You know what? One thing Uncle said that really shook me. I would have loved to ask him 2 questions.
Yes.
He spoke about extras, and I was hoping that I could ask him, you know, how such reality can be changed. If there's any hope in changing that status of
do you want me to ask him, or do you want to hear my own feeling in the interim?
Let me hear you.
It's all in one sentence. Our citizens really have to they have to free themselves.
Yeah,
they have to. That's why you keep hearing me when people call in to say, "Oh, we thank you for what you are doing." I'm not doing anything. If you want something done, gather yourselves and do it. It's the docility of our people, like Malik said. We don't mean violence. We don't say, but surely you should be able to fight. If people didn't fight, there would be no independence. There would have been no Nigeria now, in which all of you, you know, all of us are living. We just have to put up that fight. That's how it didn't happen overnight. It didn't happen overnight. Even Europe was so bad back in the day. Off with his head. The king's whatever was the Alpha and Omega. But they fought for independence. They fought for it. Nigerians don't want to fight for anything. Some of them were saying, "Yarwa, ain't no labor who am I wouldn't."
Why did you have to say it that way?
But that's what I said. Don't thank me. I'm paid to do this job to stimulate people. I'm not paid to, you know, and I've told people, people will say that, there must be a balance. Yes, there must be a balance in the things that you do. But the days of that kind of journalism are over because the politicians have pushed us. 20 years ago, I wouldn't be talking like this because it would be a party issue. You know, don't support APC against this. Now it's politicians against our people. You can tell all the same 10 and 10 pence. Some of them said he's a what do they call this? He's an obedient. Some of them I said I'm an obedient. One of them said he was. He said he left. I think 1990, whatever it is that he was born. He first of all addressed me by my first name. Well, if he wants to be a new ninja, I have no problem with that. Well, you don't give respect, you don't get it. It's as simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
And then went on to, and I said, look at, I'm going to repeat for the umpteenth time in this simple narrative. Somebody should show me any of the top politicians' kids that you will find. They are busy in Cambridge and Oxford. They have gotten jobs abroad and so on and so forth. And then, you know, they divide the populace, allow themselves to be divided, the common man.
We have to go.
Now you have heard. I got to go. I'll be back here tomorrow for Dear Bumi. Oga has instructed, just said it like an order. You have to go. Yes, sir. I'll see you tomorrow at 9.
Bye.